You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
He's gonna take it.
Two legends in basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
Welcome into another edition of the Goodman, Ryan and Goodman podcast. My apologies, Bob, there. You know, when I do my other podcast with Robbie Humble, I'm first because I'm the elder. I'm the one. This one is not just because you're the elder. It's because you're the elder and you deserve it. Anyway, welcome to the Ryan and Goodman podcast. I'm Jeff Goodman. He is Bob Ryan. And we got plenty to talk about today, Bob. We're going to do some NBA kind of around the horn type deals and a bunch of different topics. And then we're going to close with some college stuff and talk about John Chaney and the Big Five and Baylor and Gonzaga. And if this is good for college hoops, if they end up playing for a national title. But let's start off with this. And I don't know if this is the most pertinent NBA news, but I think it's interesting that they're going to try to have an all-star game down in Atlanta, a one-day deal. Down in Atlanta in the middle of – they have a break March 5th through the 10th, I believe, and they're going to try to have an All-Star game on the 7th in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Good idea, bad idea?
It isn't bad. It isn't necessary, but I don't think it's going to hurt anything in a sense for – you know, I mean, I don't know. What am I not seeing here? It's symbolic – that we're trying to keep on keeping on, you know, I mean, we all, that has to be, if there are fans, I have to be limited naturally as everything is now, but it doesn't bother me. I don't know. Am I missing something here?
I mean, the only thing you worry about a little bit is you've already had 25 or so games postponed, canceled, yeah. Postponed. And do you just worry that I was worried in all-star break, generally a lot of players fly all over the place. Quickly, they go. I hear stories of players. They go down, to warm weather places, sit in the beach for a couple of days, party. You know. Now again, I don't listen. They can go anywhere, anyway. Like whether they're going to the All-Star game or they're going home with their families, they could be at risk wherever they go. So I'm with you. I say do it. Just be smart about it, and hopefully nobody. Has COVID among the all-star players, because if it spreads around all those dudes, we're going to have one sad NBA coming out of the break.
I got to tell you a story. This is just, I hadn't thought about it in a while naturally, but you mentioned about a one day deal, right? My first all-star game was 1970, the year of the Knicks, as we call it, you know, it was in Philadelphia. And we flew, we being the contingent. It was Havlicek, I think. Havlicek, I think he was the contingent that year. That was it. And anyway, down to Philadelphia, the day of the game in the morning. And there was a luncheon. That was the only hoopla. It was a luncheon. And it was hosted by Philadelphia native sports junkie Bill Cosby. And that fellow, the comedian who's ended up his life in disgrace. But anyway, it there was a snowstorm that night in Philly. And so I got a ride over from a friend to the game to get to beat the bus. I was going to go on the bus, and I get there and all hell's, you know, the just traffic problems, everything. And I wind up, I'm sitting in the West locker room. Now he'll never remember this naturally. No reason whatsoever. To the only West player who had arrived. It was Dick Van Arsdale of the Suns. And I actually have Dick Van Arsdale all to myself. I'm 24 years old now. This is my first year covering. Anyway, and then they played a game. And Willis Reed, it was the year of the Knicks. He was the MVP. So he was a guy, you know, who was MVP in the league, MVP in the finals, and MVP in the All-Star game. A rare trifecta. I don't know if anybody else has done that.
Yeah.
We can look easily, but I haven't. Anyway, but it was, and my point is all been, it was a one-day in and out.
Fly in. They didn't fly. I mean, flew home the next morning.
Yeah. One day in and out. That was it.
Crazy.
That's the way the world was. That's the world I walked into. That's the NBA that I walked into.
50 years ago. 50 years ago, Bob. Nobody really cared. It's kind of what you're saying to some degree.
It was low key. You know, the game at that point was the 20th game. The first one was in 1951 here in Boston. And by the way, I don't know if you know this story, but the All-Star game in 1951 at the Boston Garden, which was a sellout, but it was only a sellout, they think, because it was a triple header. There was a high school game, local high school game, and some other kind of put together All-Star game. And then by like 8:30 or 9 o'clock, the NBA All-Stars took the floor.
No way.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Right. So anyway, but we digress, but I hope pleasantly.
It's a show. It is a complete show now. You wonder too, how many players will just say, "Hey, you know what? I'm not into it."
I hope they do. It's still an honor. It should be an honor. I've seen it fluctuate wildly over the years. I remember writing about by 3 or 4 years later in the early 70s that nobody seemed to care, that they weren't. And then there was a period where they started to care. And then, of course, the thing now, it's a farce. You know the over-under for the winning team is 170. And it's a dunkorama, and it's not remotely basketball. And it's a waste of time in that regard, frankly.
Oh, I don't even know what the best part is. I mean, even the slam dunk's interesting. Our boy Pat Connaughton was in it last year.
Well, yeah, that's overshadowed. That all those stuff are more important than the game.
Right.
You know,
no, the game is a joke. I mean, I went to the All-Star game a couple of years ago in New Orleans for ESPN, and I didn't even stay for the game. There was absolutely no reason to stay.
Yeah, it's sad because it could be good if they put if they tried to make it good. Actually, last year we have to back up. They went for that scoring system thing.
Yeah,
what do you call it? And it worked.
Yeah, the thing with Jonathan Mugar's.
It did create interest, and it did seem to work. You know, and keep
it Elam ending. Elam ending.
Yeah, I'm more interested. You know.
Yeah.
But I've seen. Back in the 80s and 90s, honest to God, I saw some really wonderful games, you know, where they really tried and overtime and guys putting out and people caring. And
well, Bob, why would the All-Star game be any different than regular season? The Nets beat the Clippers last night, 124-120.
No scoring. No, that's like a walk it up, squeeze the life out of it. I mean, the Nets, how many 140s have they been involved in since they put the trio together?
It's amazing.
I think. And at least two, in which both teams scored 140. All right, let's talk about them. The lab experiment known as the Brooklyn Nets.
I don't know. Again, I feel like on a given night, you watch them and you're like, okay, I see it. I see that they could fight the Lakers. And then most nights you're like, there's just no way. There's just no way. They can't guard anybody.
Now, so Durant was paying lip service to the idea, you know, we'll play defense or we can do it. We can, you know.
Well, he will. KD will. The problem is Will James Harden and Kyrie can't. Kyrie's just not a good defender. Like James Harden, I think if he wants to be, can be an above average defender. He just doesn't give a shit half the time. He just doesn't care.
They're not going to beat the Lakers if they even get that far.
Right.
You know. But they are, I mean, you know, but we're seeing glimpses of, oh my God, this is the tsunami that they can bring, you know, I mean, Kyrie just waltzed away to 39 last night. You know, hey, you know, doing it, going to the basket. My God, is he good? You know, let's just stop, take a moment to say, whatever a nutcase or what, that's not fair. Whatever a truly complicated, thoughtful human being, often indecipherable, but he's trying, you know, off the court. Okay, I'll give him that. Boy, is he good.
He's fun to watch. He is. I mean, I don't know too many. Is there a guard? Is there anybody, Bob, that you can compare to Kyrie with his handle, his ability to get to the basket and finish using angles?
Yeah.
Is there anybody?
The Zeke was pretty good.
He was.
Isaiah Thomas. Let's not forget him. He was pretty damn good and would flourish in this game. There's no doubt. There's no problem. But to the rim. Yes. One guy I've seen. The one guy who I used to say, and you had to see him in person. You could not appreciate. You had to be there because there's a feel that a whoosh when he got to the basket with one extra little gear, and an unparalleled ability to move laterally in the air after going up on the left side of the basket and finishing on the right, not just with a curl, but his whole body got there somehow. Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
The MVP Rose. When I first saw him, I saw him in the tournament. So I got to see him play three times that year. And that's when I said, folks, you can't understand this kid until you see him in person. The TV doesn't do him justice. So there's your answer. That guy got to the rim, but that's the only person.
He was so different though. Derrick Rose was just a freak athlete where Isaiah and Kyrie, neither are freak athletes. Neither are like physically imposing. The big difference was Isaiah was a terrific passer. Like Kyrie is a scorer at his core and really, yeah, he can pass at times, but that's not his game.
He's a one and a half at best. He's certainly not a one. He's a one and a half at best, or a one and three quarters, or a one and nine tenths.
Is Kyrie though and Isaiah, are they a good comparison? Because they're both complicated individuals as well, Bob.
Oh, I've had my personal circumstances with Isaiah Thomas. So yeah,
I'm sure.
And it was very pleasant, but as it turned out, in the aftermath of the Dennis Rodman, Colin Larry, it just, overrated and the whole thing. And Zeke chimed in and all that. And then it was an aftermath of that. And I had ripped him in the tournament. I had ripped him. And anyway, long story, some other day. Another rainy day story we'll save. All right. But he had his own quirks. How about that? Quirks.
Was Isaiah likable when you dealt with him? Because he was likable. I had like a 6-hour dinner with him a few years ago when he got he took the FIU job down in Florida. So I went down to Miami and spent some time. And it was like a marathon dinner. Mm-hmm. And I found him to be super engaging.
I have dined with him. Broken bread in the morning with him at his request. But to settle an issue. Which you gotta like to start with, right? You know, it's one of those things that you just don't forget. There's somewhat of a parallel there, but I think Kyrie's in another realm entirely.
In terms of off the court,
what's going on? Yes. You know, here up in Don La Cabeza.
Yep.
There's something going Don La Tete. There are a few I've ever encountered that are more mystifying than that fellow.
The new year is here and marks a fresh start for your small business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When your business is ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person and find them quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 722 million members worldwide. Getting started, easier than ever, with new features to help you find qualified candidates quickly. post a job with targeted screening questions, LinkedIn will quickly get your role in front of more qualified candidates. Manage job posts and contact candidates from a single view on the familiar LinkedIn.com as functions are streamlined onto one simple screen. So I'm watching the Celtics Golden State game last night and watching Steph, and he's incredible. I mean, just the things he does, you know, it's sad because last year he was hurt, and when he wasn't, they weren't any good. This year they're like kind of mediocre without Clay. Draymond's just, you know, Draymond was perfect when you surrounded him with KD, Steph, and Clay, because honestly, all he was doing was shooting uncontested threes. Nobody's paying attention. Now they're paying attention. Andrew Wiggins is kind of their second guy.
Yeah,
I feel bad for not only Steph, but for the NBA that Clay went down. I obviously feel bad for Clay.
Oh, yeah.
Because I really think if you put Clay on this team, wouldn't they be the Lakers' biggest worry?
I think so.
Is that fair?
I think so. I do. I think. And also, you know, I mean, I've lost track. I didn't watch, okay? I'll be honest. I watched Baylor and
Texas.
Texas and enjoyed it. And then I had to get up too early. So I didn't push myself. And I just felt, you know, anyway, I didn't watch. So I don't know how it went. I mean,
Celtics won.
I know. And they got good nights from Tatum and Brown.
Yep.
Another struggle night from Walker. We'll talk about that. I want to have to talk about him a little bit. So anyway, I was going to say, Steph Curry. Yeah. People shouldn't forget how good. Now, the only thing I'll say is this. He's had moments of glory, and they've been to the mountaintop, and they were a team, you know, for the ages. And he'll always, that's never going to be forgotten. He'll have that. It's not as if his career is unfulfilled, but he still has a lot to offer. What is he, 31?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, 31 or two. He's got a lot to offer. I mean, yeah, he had another 30, whatever the hell, last night, you know, and I think he's the greatest shooter who's ever lived. There's nobody that's been able to get a shot off with reliable consistency from the distances that he does, you know, and he goes to the hoop. It looks so nice and
he had a play last night.
Easy that he makes it look so good. Oh, he's a wonderful player. You know,
and he's an elite passer when he wants to be. Yep. Like, that's the one thing about Steph. Like last night, here was his line last night, Bob. 38 points, 7 of 14 from 3, 7 of 7 from the line, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 turnovers.
11 rebounds.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Like, this guy is – he's just so much fun to watch. And again, I just feel like, man, wouldn't you rather watch a Golden State Lakers Western Conference Finals if it's Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Wiggins is your number 4 guy?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe they'd have a chance. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit here. But, you know, the window's closing, and I wonder just how much longer, even if Clay comes back next year, they got to add another piece. Like James Wiseman, he's hurt right now. He didn't play last night. He's played well.
The only returns are good. I can understand. I see what people saw in him.
Yes.
There's no question.
Wiseman's going to help. So next year – you know, their starting five could be pretty, you know, if you get them all back, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Wiseman.
2 years out for Clay is just, boy, that's going to be something.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. But I feel bad in a sense that the NBA is not going to get a chance to see this Warriors team maybe one more shot here when they're young enough to be able to make another run.
That team will be – the gold standard of the new world, the new basketball world, you know, the world that the 3-point dominant world, the 3-point mania world, I like to call it, the 3-point centric world, whatever. It is a different game. It is just a different game than the one that the Bulls played, or that the Celtics played, or that the Lakers played, or that the Trailblazers with Walton or the Knicks with Clyde played. It's a different game. And here's the one thing I want to tell the millennials, though, the youngins. There's other people, if they were playing, if this were the game, they could have played it. They could have altered their approach. They could have said, hey, we got to take 33s. All right, we will. You didn't do it. The game hadn't come to that Daryl Moreyization yet. in the history's written, he's going to have to be a major part of it.
Sad but true. All right. Are the Utah Jazz for real, Bob? 16-5, best record in the NBA right now?
it's a nice appetizer, I guess. They're, you can't dismiss what they have done. They not only are they 16-5, but they pound you. I mean, you're surprised when they don't win by 10 or more. And they got derailed one night the other night, but everybody's going to have an off night. They're on the road, you know, and that's fine. I want to see a little more, but wow, you know, I wasn't ready for this. Man, we know they were nice last year, right? They were good. And they were, and okay, that's cool. But, you know, and Donovan Mitchell, oh, he's really ascended, you know. But that's what we were talking. We'll go dial it back to bubble basketball, right? Donovan Mitchell was one of the five or six best stories that came out of it, right? Yep. And maybe one of the three or four. But I wasn't ready for this, you know. Also, there's such a, you know, lightning rod because of Rudy Gobert. And I call the world was pre-Rudy Gobert and post-Rudy Gobert March 11th, you know.
True. very true.
But speaking of him, by the way, he's pretty damn good too.
He is good. I mean, he's perfect for what they need, you know. Yeah. Like, you get a guy like that and you surround him with guys who can score, Donovan Mitchell continues to get better and better, and you know, Jordan Clarkson can score and he can shoot. I mean, and Bogdanovich is capable, and Inglis, and
irrefutable fact is that they shoot threes as well or better than anybody, and
which is weird. Okay, so
who was ready for that?
Not me, because Jordan Clarkson and Donovan Mitchell have never been known as like great shooters. They've been known as great scorers.
Yeah, so yeah,
right. That does surprise me. You know, like yeah Bogdanovich and Inglis.
Yeah, Bogdanovich, sure.
Those two. Mike Conley's playing better, which is awesome.
How about that, huh?
You're not going to find a better. You are not going to find a better human being than Mike Conley. Like, well,
that's my salt to the earth. That. And when he's 33 now and playing as well as he's ever played, and that's fine. You know, I'm glad. I'm really glad.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not buying him.
Need a little more,
and even a little more.
I got to put a word in for the coach. The coach. I'm sorry. I think we mentioned this. This is my, you know, for cock the crazy thing. You know. When I look at Quinn Snyder, all I think of is Elmer Gantry, the movie with Burt Lancaster, because he had that, he has that floppy, that curl that comes down when his hair, and he has a passionate, shall we say, almost frightening demeanor at times, right?
Yeah.
And I go, Elmer Gantry, I'm sorry. I may be the only person on earth that thinks Elmer Gantry when I see Quinn Snyder, but this goes way back. There we go.
All right. Here's one for you. If Carmelo Anthony scores 638 more points in his career, Bob, he will break into the top 10 in the NBA's all-time scoring list. He will pass, at that point, Elvin Hayes.
Ah, well, that's good. I'm glad anybody passes Elvin. It's okay with me. I'll root for him. You know, he's one of my least favorite. He's one of my, he's one of my least favorite players of all time.
Why?
He offended me aesthetically and personally. What do you need to know? No,
can
I mean, I don't know
the personally part.
Not a horrible human being or anything like that, but he was a whining, phony crybaby, you know, and he had excuses and he had one shot, which is a pretty good damn good shot if you
obviously. Anyway, he scored 27,313 points with that shot.
Subtract the free throws, and you know, 80% of them were on a very reliable turnaround jumper. But he was, and it also, it's a long story. He was monotonously boring.
We won't go there. My question to you was,
okay, let's get back to Carmelo.
Yes, when Carmelo retires, what is his legacy? Like, how do you think of Carmelo in the NBA scorers?
He's going to go in the Hall of Fame naturally. You know, he'll walk into the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to deny him that, you know. I think he was a stat accumulator, a non-winning player for the most part. And I don't know if that's ever changed. Maybe he's seen the religion now at age 38 or whatever the hell, giving this one last shot. I didn't expect him to be as productive as he is, has been with Portland, frankly. But I was no fan of his when he was with the Knicks, but you know, the numbers would go up, and they had a 1 year, they won 54, you know, I know that. And with Mike Woodson, I believe was the coach but I won't be at the testimonial and And if I'm ever so fortunate as to be back on the committee, I have been, you know, which I doubt I will be, I would vote for him. But, you know, but I won't be at the he doesn't interest, you know, I mean, I'm speaking as a fan now. I'm not speaking as a so-called, you know, he doesn't interest me. But not, it's a Syracuse, I was there tonight, they won. I was there, you know, and when Hakeem blocked the shot, it was right in front of me. I bet if you see a picture taken from the other side of the court, you'll see I'm in the background. I'm right there. He blocked that shot right in front of me. And I'll give him, hey, by the way, and he's certainly been done right by does he ever graduate? I have no idea. I won't say alma mater. But his school of choice, he's given back a lot of money. He's been very generous to his school, and I salute him for that.
So Carmelo's still got a pass. I'll give you the Big O is 12th. Hakeem is 11th. Elvin Hayes is 10th. Moses Malone is 9th. And I hope you know where I'm going with this. Moses Malone, one of his records fell last night.
Dummy.
Fred VanVleet scored 54 points, which eclipsed, obviously very different, but he eclipsed Moses Malone's 53 as the undrafted player with the most points.
But his undrafted. Moses is an asterisk. He was.
Right, obviously.
He wasn't undrafted. You know.
Yes. I laughed when I saw that.
Different category. Somebody actually wrote that or printed that or claimed that?
Yes.
Jesus, you know, sometimes this people can embarrass us in this profession. I'm sorry.
Ridiculous.
See what people, if you're not wondering, Moses Malone was undrafted because he signed out of high school with the ABA.
Exactly.
He would have been the first draft pick in the NBA, for God's sake, probably. Right.
Fred VanVleet was undrafted because
he's legitimately undrafted.
Right.
Yes.
Amazing story. You know,
I wish I had bought that stock. I wish I had bought that stock, Jeff, because I did love him in college.
I loved him too, but I didn't even know if he'd make it in the NBA. And most people didn't. Listen, like 5 years ago, he was on a G League team with Pascal Siakam. And I only know this because they were coached by Jerry Stackhouse, who is doing an atrocious job right now at Vanderbilt. And probably should be gone after this year. He's been awful. But Jerry Stackhouse won a G League title with Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam. How about that?
Oh, wow. Good stuff. Love it. Yeah. Well, so, he's a wonderful story.
VanVleet, 17 of 23 from the field, 11 of 14 from the three, 9 of 9 from the line, 54 points, which is a franchise record for the Toronto Raptors, and it couldn't happen to a better guy because of everything. I mean, again, he just embodies – toughness, perseverance, all of it.
Remember the Gene Smithson days, MTXE? Remember that one? Oh, well, you're just a kid. No, I mean, Gene Smithson, I believe was the name of the coach, and he came up with a logo, put on his jersey.
Oh.
Mental toughness, extra effort.
Yeah.
All right, racing around today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, VanVleet and Ron Baker were fun. I mean, Ron Baker was a walk-on. He'd still be in the league, I think, right now if he hadn't gotten hurt and he's dealing
with
a hip injury. And Fred VanVleet just continues to get better and better and better. But heck of a story there. All right, let's move on. I know you wanted to touch on this, and I did too, on John Chaney's passing, the former Temple head coach that is probably most famous, which is sad, for his run-in with John Calipari in a post-game in which he threatened to kill Cal. Which you weren't? Were you there for that? No.
No, I wasn't. But you know, obviously, highly interested because I was. You know, we were all over UMass at the Boston Globe in those days. Yeah, back in 1995-96 when they went to the Final Four, and they did go despite what the vacated that you'll see in
they
the
were there.
I was there, and those fans were there.
They were there. They were definitely there. John Chaney.
John Chaney.
You grew up around Big Five basketball. John Chaney went to what, 5 Elite Eights? I mean, he was an institution at Temple. People forget. Young people don't realize Temple used to be really, really, really
good. Ranked number one with the Mark Macon team at one point that year. They didn't go fulfill their destiny, but the whole Big Five, the whole world's changed. We're going to get to that in general. I go back even farther than that, though, with John Chaney. I remember him as a player in the Eastern League.
Really?
I was in Eastern League City, Trenton, New Jersey, in 1961. We got the relocated Easton Madisons, and we picked up a franchise in the Eastern League when it was the second best basketball league in the world, when the NBA rosters had 10 players, which means there were 80 players playing in the NBA, and the next best round of players were playing, riding buses and driving station wagons around such cities as Hazleton and Sunbury, Allentown, Camden, Trenton, Wilmington, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And John Chaney, who happened to be an African-American, a very good player at Bethune-Cookman, who was not recruited by the big schools because he was Black, and was good enough to be in the NBA. But there was a unspoken quota system, and he didn't qualify to crack the at a point when there were, you know, barely 15 or 20 Black players in the league in the early 60s and mid 60s. He was a really damn good basketball player. Okay. Yes. Then he goes to Cheney State, which is funny because Cheney was spelled with an E and his name is spelled with an A, but it might as well have been Cheney with an A because of what he did for them, including winning a national championship, like D2 title. But I remember him at the first time I encountered him as a press conference when he was with the Temple team, which happened on several years during his tenure, you know, but talking about life, you know, as the D2 coach at a school without much money. And one of the duties that he had, he drove the bus, maybe not all the time, but more than once,
yeah.
You know, and his whole story. And, you know, I can sum it up by saying, and it's the same to Nolan Richardson and as all these great, wonderful Black coaches, for the most part, they lived lives that no white writer will ever understand. Yep. Will never understand what they went through and what life was like growing up and the obstacles they faced to get where they were. I mean, John Chaney, he put his imprint on Temple basketball and national basketball. This team stood for something, you know. We all knew it was turnovers. No, turnovers were the deadliest sin in John Chaney's mind. And they played a wonderful scrambled zone defense. They were no one wanted to see Temple on their schedule.
Right.
You're in for a tooth pull evening if you're going to play Temple.
That's when the Big Five was right. I mean, you had Villanova was good, Temple was good, St. Joe's was good.
LaSalle
was great with the L train, right?
Yeah, with Lionel Simmons, a 3,000-point scorer.
Right.
That's right, and you know, and Penn on and off, you know, but Penn, you know, for many, Penn went the last Ivy League team to go to a Final Four was Penn, you know, in 79. But
Tony Price, right? Tony Price.
Yeah, yeah. And Bobby Willis. And Ron. Oh, and then Phil Hankinson. Oh, God. Yes, absolutely. And Corky Calhoun. So they had some players.
Yeah.
The Big Five, you can't explain it to someone who wasn't there.
Well, it's irrelevant now. Bob, nobody cares about Big Five. Like now, I know they all play each other still, but it's just Villanova going 4-0 every year.
It's a shambles. It's right. Not what it was at all.
Should it be gone? Like, should they do away with the Big Five at this point? Because it is just all about Villanova just dominating right now.
The idea would be the better idea would be the others to build up, which is going to bring us to their arch rival and the plight there. And maybe nobody, you know, but let's just talk about Villanova's arch rival is St. Joe's within the Big Five. And for decades, it was a wonderful battle and it was a fair battle. What's happened in the recent years is, you know, so appalling. You know, St. Joe's is under the, you know, Phil Martelli was ousted 2 years ago, right? They were falling down, but he was ousted 2 years ago. And a new athletic director who does not know, according to my sources, remotely what she's doing, hired Billy Lang. And so far, Billy Lang is 6-26, and they are 1-14 this year. It is appalling.
Their best player, Ryan Daly, for a lot
of it. School with rich basketball tradition.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, it hurts me a lot because I grew up as a Big Five person was going back to 1952. But and then meanwhile, though, the flip side, I'm just going to give you, I know you know, but the scope of it is never cannot be exaggerated. We know they're ranked number three at the moment, the Wildcats, right? Here's their last 8 years. You ready?
Go ahead.
29-5, 33-3, 35-5, 32-4, 36-4, 26-10. Oh my God. How'd that happen? 24-7, and right now they're 11-1.
They now got what, two Jay national, Wright, what Jay Wright has done is
they got two national championships along the way there to go along with the one they won in 85. And you know, but the point is those two schools were equal for decades.
Yep.
Equal. And you know, and St. Joe's had the upper hand often. And wow, I mean, I can't imagine being, you know, a good St. Joe's. And the other thing I said, St. Joe's fans, and I'm going to get on the soapbox here, they were special. There was never, in my experience, which is going dating back to 1952, in my experience of being a college basketball lover, and as you know, having attended games in 201 separate venues for college basketball.
I do know that.
As you do know that, the greatest fans ever were at St. Joe's.
Wow. Joe Sullivan's going to love this episode, by the way.
They made more noise with 100 people than most teams could make with 10,000. They were the St. Joe's fans of the 50s with Dr. Jack and the 60s and the 70s and 80s, the greatest collection of zealot fans. And, of course, with the best mascot in all of college sports, the St. Joe Hawk, which is a scholarship position, I believe, once you get it. And he waves those arms futilely now from the time they take the floor to the end of the game. But it is the coolest thing. God loves St. Joseph's, a school, little school up on the hill. And they deserve better than what they got right now. All right, I'm off the soapbox.
All right, well, another little school is doing fairly well for itself out in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't think we have to feel bad for Gonzaga, Markview, or their fans. Every single year, Markview has been the head coach at Gonzaga. They have made the NCAA tournament. It started with Dan Munson.
Yep.
Maybe I'll try to pull Few on this pod. Maybe I'll see if he can come. If he can,
I'd love to talk to him. Dan Munson, just by the way, that year in 99, they came within a whisper of going to the Final Four. That's who UConn beat.
Yes.
Final Four en route to winning Calhoun's first championship.
People forget. So
Dan Munson, however, he did the typical thing that any 99.9% of coaches would have done.
Yep.
The boat pulled it back into the dock, and he got on. And said, okay, Gonzaga's nice, but I'm not going to do – I've reached my limit here, right? So out of here goes to Minnesota, and I guess he's at, Long Beach now?
Yep.
He's been wandering in the basketball desert for the last 20 years while his assistant has built Gonzaga into a monstrous annual power.
Listen, if we can't get Mark Few, maybe we'll get Dan Munson on next week. Hilarious. He will tell some unbelievable stories of how Gonzaga started. So we'll try to figure it out. I'm gonna mark that down for next week to see.
But if we get the game, I know you want, and I know I want.
Yeah.
If we get the championship game, that maybe not the networks.
Right.
You know,
no, they don't want it.
CBS doesn't want it. I'm sure.
Turner does not want it.
If you're a pure basketball fan and don't give a damn about what's on the front of the jersey, right? You want Baylor and Gonzaga if you're watching them play this year. That's 100%. What you want. And there's going to be a coach who resurrected a dead program, dead in Waco, Texas, left in tatters with huge shame and horror against a guy who's built a nice little school in Spokane into an annual power. Wow. That's just to step back, and somebody never told you in 1990 or 2000 that there'd be an NBA championship game, Gonzaga and Baylor. Now, we may not get that game, a lot of, but right now, those are the two best teams draw a line right now.
Listen, for a writer, it's a dream.
Oh.
It's a dream for us, right? Like, and for basketball purists, it's a dream because you see these two underdog stories. And they're the two favorites right now. Well, oh, by the way, we've got Kentucky, Duke, and Michigan State. All, if the season ended today, Bob, they're all in the NIT. All of them.
What I got to ask you this. What did you make of the Coach K contretemps with the student reporter?
You know, I just thought it was condescending. That was my problem. I just think he's condescending too much. And he, listen, he's arguably the greatest coach in college basketball history. I might put John Wooden above him, but whatever. You can make a case for both, no doubt. I just thought he handled it in a way that he didn't have to. And ultimately, if he's winning and they're number one in the country, is he doing that? Is John Calipari throwing his freshman under the bus early on in the season? No, I mean, and listen, in their defense, there's a lot of other stuff going on right now too. With COVID and
everybody's going. Well, this latest pronouncement, my take on the thing was probably exaggerated. It wasn't as horrible as I agree with you. It was condescending. It's not unprecedented for him to be condescending. But
no, you don't think?
All right, so let's talk people. And I like him, and I don't know him well, but, you know, he's been always good to me and all that. But, you know, I'll be honest, you know, but he has his ways. He has his imperial mode. We'll put it that way, okay?
No doubt about it.
But then what he did after they got beat the other night but was a little I didn't like it. He called them soft. He really, really not ripped. I mean, I thought I could address it and get it fixed another day, you know. I don't know. I mean, you're right. They're young. I'm not sure. It's not very becoming. Coach, tell them. It's not very becoming.
Can I give you my favorite case story?
Sure.
So it's 2006 is really when I really started. I was doing recruiting before then, started really covering college hoops. 2007, I'm working on a story, a Duke story, and he called me from his cell phone and didn't block his cell phone number. So obviously I plugged it into my phone and said, hey, if I'm ever going to need it, I'll use it. I'm not going to call him for no reason, really, but I may need it.
Hey, I know that's what we have
you
to
know
do.
The deal. We all do it.
Of course.
So 2008 comes, and I'm down at my in-laws in Boca trying to get away. I think it must have been in like February, and it's about 8:30 at night. And Bob Knight retires. So I'm like, all right, if there's ever a time, I'm working at Fox at the time. I remember a time I'm going to call Coach K. It's got to be now, right? Like, I didn't have any relationship with him at all. He didn't know who I was. And Duke, that year, they had been on this kind of mission to be more – people were killing them, so they were more media friendly. That was kind of their whole mantra that year, was to be more media friendly. So I was like, all right, you know what? I'll try it, right? I'll call him. It's about 9:30 at night at this point. I'm probably debating for about a half hour, 45 minutes, right, whether to call him. I'm, you know. So I call him. He answers. I said, hey, Coach, this is Jeff Goodman from Fox. Just wanted to get a quick comment from you about, you know, your mentor, Bob Knight, retiring. This is neither the number, the time, or the number to call. Thanks, click. And he hangs right up on me. So I wrote it the next day. I wrote the whole thing. I said, so much for them being more media friendly. Like, come on, you can't give me 30 seconds of a quick quote on Bob Knight, or at least be a little bit more respectful. So the next day, John Jackson, Duke's SID, calls me up and he says, hey, just so you know, like, if you ever need anything, just call me and we'll handle it. Don't worry about it. And they did after that. Like, they were great. But, you know, again, like, Kay and I have had our run-ins, plenty of them over the years. Like, we're good at times. We're not good because, you know, like, one of the things I always said, and I said it on the air plenty, was USA Basketball helped him get back at Duke. They helped him. You know, that obviously the juice he had with guys like LeBron helped him. And also he had access that other coaches didn't have to the young players.
Yep. So, but they won't acknowledge it.
He had like an hour in-home visit with Austin Rivers. You know, he would – I saw it. I don't remember Alex Murphy, one of the three Murphy brothers around our parts.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up. They were playing AAU basketball. They were recruiting Alex, who eventually went to Duke and then transferred, brought him over and introduced him to Kevin Durant at the national team. There were advantages. He was able to – Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, and Tyus Jones – they were all in USA Basketball coming up. Mm. So there were advantages. So I said it on the air multiple times, and he took umbrage with it one year and came up to me in Vegas at an AAU event. And I just said, listen, Mike, like, it's true. It's true. You're going to try to tell me that you didn't get Justice Winslow and Okafor and Tyus, that USA Basketball didn't help? Of course they did. And you earned it. And that's what I told them in the conversation. I said, you earned USA Basketball. Every other coach would probably have done the same thing. Just buy into it. Like, don't try to bullshit people. You earned it.
Absolutely. That's what can I say? I was going to say something about that, but yeah, no, there's no doubt that.
Are you?
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Let me say this. I can't think of, we've all gone, of anyone else in the history of in the last 50 years of all basketball who was more perfectly suited to be that Olympic coach and bridge the gap between, you know, jumping from college and relating to the pros than Mike Krzyzewski. He was a dream candidate for us. And we needed it, you know, and, you know, people, I was front and center at the demise at the low point of international basketball, United States of America in the 20th century, losing to such teams as ultimately losing to Greece in Tokyo in 2006. We lost to Greece fair and square. We were pick and rolled to death by Shortenitis, the baby Shaq.
Yes.
And that was his first year taken over, and he knew what the task was at that point. And you know, you saw what happened. We were getting the gold back in 08 and 12. But anyway, nobody.
Are you excited? Hey, Bob, are you excited for the big Carolina Duke game this weekend on Saturday?
I might make other plans. I might.
I'm intrigued.
I don't think I'm moving heaven and earth. If it's 6 o'clock, you know.
Come on, this is like a winner. It's a knockout game in a sense. Like,
yeah,
winner might go to the NCAA tournament. Loser might be watching the other one go while they're in the NIT. Like, this one, honestly.
That's a selling point. That's a selling point.
I'm going to sell it to you. I'm going to sell you. You need to. Now, again, does ESPN need to promote this one like they have? No.
Leaving out a little details in this promotion of Jay Will and Vince Carter.
It's hilarious. They should put up there 1960. That's what they should put up on the promotion. Because that's the last time these two teams have played when both have been unranked. It's amazing, though. Think about that.
I know. No. It's 60 years. Oh, my God. Of course. Absolutely. No.
I mean, Kay, think about this. The only time Kay hasn't gone to the NCAA tournament was the infamous back injury.
Yeah.
And Roy, in his entire career – has not gone twice. Once was his first year taking over at Kansas after Larry Brown put him on postseason ban.
Right.
And the other was the year after his second national title game when he won it all at Carolina. So, I mean, this is just, it's historic in a way. And well, I'll leave you with this. I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you think the tournament this year will resonate nationally if we don't have, We're not going to have Kentucky. We know that. Unless they win the SEC tournament, they're gone. And they're not winning the SEC tournament. We're probably not going to have Michigan State. And let's say for argument's sake, we don't have Duke.
Yeah.
Is this tournament going to lose a lot? Or is the average fan going to say, I'm not watching this thing?
It won't make any difference to me. But I've learned the hard way over the years that it does matter to more people than I can relate to. You know, that kind of thing. Secondly, there being fewer people – by far in offices, all those pools, are they going to be out there this year? Are people going to find a way, you know, with the remote aspect of the way people are working to
good question.
You can do it. You can do it, but will it still have the resonance with the feedback and the next day talk? And I don't know. I think it's going to be they need a tournament, but I'll be interested, but I don't think I'll have the resonance at all that
normally. Yeah, I kind of am with you on this. You know, I love it. I love this year having Gonzaga and Baylor and Villanova. Like, even Villanova, we act like Villanova is now this blue blood, but let's face it, like, Villanova was never put in the same class ever as Carolina, as Duke, as UCLA, as, you know, like they've moved themselves into that equation the last 5 years by winning two titles. Jay Wright's done a remarkable job, but anyway. All right. Well, listen.
Ryan Goodman podcast guest, Jay Ryan. Let's not forget that.
That's right. Now we got to, I got to use my juice to try to get Mark Few in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'm going to work on that when we get off here, and plenty to talk about coming up. We'll have plenty more as College Hoops kind of nears the end of its regular season. We'll continue to watch the Brooklyn Nets and Bob Ryan's favorite player, Kyrie.
If you get Mark Few, I want him be doing it from Jack and Dan's.
He probably will. Okay. Will. Either that or while fishing, maybe we can get him. All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Very good. Take care.